chill. They say I'm nasty, but I don't give a damn. Getting girls is how I live. Some nasty questions, why am I so real? But they don't understand me, or really don't know the deal about a brother trying hard to make it right. Not long ago, before I win this fight. So,
hey there, my Tsunami Generation, and welcome to a brand new or old rehash podcast, depending on how long you've been listening to me. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the first episode of Tom's Top 10. Why 10? Because this one doesn't go up to 11, this one only goes up to 10. Thank you to all of those who get the joke, you passed the test. But yes, ladies and gentlemen, I am bringing back, or rebranding in a way, an old video podcast I used to do called Thomas's Top 5. You can actually find some of them still on my YouTube page, which you can go find by going to YouTube and searching for my page, Mattis Leonhart, L-E-O-N-H-A-R-T. Of course, that's also where my Anime Next videos are, so if you watch those, you can always, you know, find them through that. But I did this video called Thomas's Top 5, where I kind of my top 5. And the last video I actually did was this big month-long Thomas's Top 5, where I counted down my top 20 mechs, which I may bring back. But, you know, I've been wanting to bring that video back in audio form and do in a top 10 list. Because, you know, it's fairly easy, and it's something I can do on the fly, and whenever, you know, it spontaneously hits me and I find a good topic. Especially with me expanding my, you know, the Absolution Network's field beyond just Japan and animation. As, you know, again, we are about the Toonami generation. So, you know, I've been wanting to do it actually for a year and a half, and last night actually is when it hit me, because I was watching The Dark Knight, and there was a scene that, you know, I just remember, you know, as I was watching it, how much I enjoyed that scene in the theater. And how much everybody around me in that theater really enjoyed it. And how that whole movie was just this great movie theater experience. And, you know, I got to thinking, what were my favorite, you know, theater experiences? Because, you know, I've had a lot of good theater experiences. I've also had some bad ones, you know, like a guy coming after me watching the second Spider-Man, Sam Raimi Spider-Man movie, and getting in my face about how he's going to beat the hell out of me because he mistaken me for a bunch of kids in the back row who wouldn't shut up. Or, you know, getting almost arrested because I looked at somebody while my African-American friend was hauled off to jail. You remember that, don't you? My good buddy, whose name shall remain nameless, because I'm not going to blare his name out on this podcast. But anyhow, you know, I've had many actually good experiences. So, and it really actually did push me to finally get this podcast out. So, this is going to be the first inaugural episode of Thomas's Top 10. Like I said, I don't have a set schedule for this podcast. It's mostly going to be when, you know, it hits me, when a topic hits me that I feel I can really do, you know, justice to. This is going to be an opinionated podcast. This is not meant to be the be-all, end-all of a list. It's just my opinion. So take it what it is. It's based off of my experiences, especially with today's topic, as you're sort of hearing right there. And, you know, I do hope that, you know, because it will be sort of a quick podcast, you know, I hope this doesn't go over 30 minutes, mind you. But you never know with the way I talk. That it will create a fun podcast for you guys to listen to. So, and, you know, as I was mentioning, today's topic, the first topic for the first inaugural episode of Thomas's Top 10, is going to be my favorite movie experience. So, ladies and gentlemen, get your Big Gulp soda, get your popcorn, and enjoy this final countdown as we take a look at my top 10 favorite movie theater experiences. start the countdown with number 10. And this was really hard. As I went through them, like, because I actually had some, like, you know, tough criticisms of, like, what was an enjoyable movie experience? And there will be some cheating, some ties along the way, but I'll explain those when I get to them. But, you know, number... Because I was crossed between this one, and I have to give an honorable mention to The Lion King. But part of that was I just remember seeing The Lion King in theaters, and it being this just vast movie. Watching it there with my sisters, my grandmother took us to go see it. It wasn't necessarily the movie theater experience, though, which is why I got beat out by this film. Because, again, movie theater experiences is more just a good movie. I mean, it can even be a bad movie, as there will be on this list. Just giving you fair warning, it's coming up. But, you know, it's about not just the movie, but did I enjoy the movie and the experience of the audience? Because that's what makes a great movie theater experience. So at number 10, and this is where, the shit's gonna start to fly. Ladies and gentlemen, at number 10, the very first Transformers movie. Now, before you leave, hear me out. Let's be fair, the very first Transformers movie, you know, of everything that's come out, it's probably the best. I mean, I personally have enjoyed the Transformers series, but I don't think any of them have been as good as the first one. And that's mostly because I think the first one had a very good balance to it. I mean, you can say what you want about Michael Bay, you know, his films, and maybe they don't translate when they're brought to the television, but, you know, all the Transformer films have been somewhat of an experience in the theater. I mean, hell, even my mother went to go see the third one with me. But, you know, the first one, it was just this great experience of going there and there being fellow Transformer fans. Mind you, also, this one also beat out Pacific Rim, which was a very enjoyable experience with, you know, fellow giant mecha fans, but it wasn't packed. And sometimes when you are part of a theater that isn't packed, it can take away from the experience, even when it's a good movie like Pacific Rim is. This was a packed theater, and I just remember us all having fun and, you know, just enjoying, you know, clapping when the Transformers appear, and of course, you know, and unfortunately, this is probably what is the reason why, you know, so many piss and, you know, sex jokes get put into Transformers afterwards, or at least in the second one. I mean, to be fair, they kind of reeled back on that in the third one, and I haven't seen the fourth one yet, so I don't know if there are any in there. But definitely, I think a lot of those sex jokes and sort of toilet humor in the second one stem from the success of what happened in Transformers 1, in particular the one scene that nobody saw coming and everybody loved, because it was childish toilet humor, and of course that's Bumblebee whizzing on the guy, and then to hear Peter Cullen in his great Optimus Prime voice going, "Bumblebee, stop lubricating on the person." I mean, we just bust out laughing, and it's this great theater experience that you just can't recreate. And the fact of the matter is, it was a very enjoyable movie for a first Transformers movie. Was there problems with it? Of course. It wasn't Michael Bay film. Of course it was a Michael Bay. I mean, okay, to be fair, I'm somebody who actually likes Michael Bay films, but I can understand why people don't like them. So I at least understand the critiques of it. But at the end of the day, the very first Transformer film was still a very enjoyable film. And the fact of the matter is, it was a great theater experience that I very much enjoyed. Moving on to number 9. This is where we're going to get cheating and where more shit's going to fly. And I put them together because they were so similar experiences, including the fact that I went to go see it twice. Even though they came out 2 years apart, but they're by the same director. So at number 9, I have Independence Day / the 1998 Godzilla movie. Again, before you leave, hear me out. Now, as far as Independence Day, that was the first, like, major block. Well, okay, to be fair, it wasn't. The first major blockbuster is actually number 1 on my list, and we'll get to that when we get to number 1. But it was just going to this blockbuster, again, the theater is packed, and everybody being into that film. And again, I mean, has it aged, and has people seen flaws in the movie that I guess people see? I guess, but you know what? Independence Day is just a kick-ass film. And yes, there are a lot of problems with Godzilla as well, again, by the same directors. Devlin and, oh god, I'm blanking on the name, and I apologize. Again, like I said, this podcast is a bit spontaneous, really new notes to go through. But, you know, if anybody's heard my review of the 98 Godzilla movie over on Tokyo SOS, you know that I feel, while it may not be a good Godzilla movie, it's a fairly decent giant monster movie. In fact, I would say an even an enjoyable giant monster movie. It just has that big fatal flaw of the 20-minute baby scene, which I'm so thankful that the 2014 Godzilla movie made fun of in spectacular fashion. And it did that whole storyline in 5 minutes, which is a hilarious little poke at the 98 Godzilla, I felt. But, yeah, it was just... And I remember being in the theater. Again, remember, let's see, I was 98, so I was 13, I want to say. 13, maybe 14. You know, there were some genuine, in both films, you know, when they're doing the alien autopsy and Independence Day, oh my god, the first time I watched it, I couldn't watch it. I had to leave the theater for a couple minutes while the scene finished, and I didn't get to see the entire scene until the second time I went. I mean, that's the thing, is I actually enjoyed both these movies so well, I went a second time. And both times, I was with a big brother type of person, and he tried to take me to another movie. It was a boring movie, and we switched over to the other movie. I remember with Independence Day, it was Tin Cup, which is about golf. Because that's what you take a 13-year-old hyperactive kid with autism to go see. A movie about golf. So, but, you know, anyhow, it was that thing to where, you know, when Godzilla chomps the Apache helicopter that's chasing them, and you think, like, I think I got away. That was a genuinely scary moment that made me, you know, actually jump. I remember, like, somebody had brought their, like, five-year-old daughter, who apparently was a Godzilla fan. And you're like, it's Godzilla scary. Actually crying. It was too scary for her. So, I mean, say what you want about it. I mean, both films had memorable lines, and, you know, Jacques Reno, great in Godzilla. I mean, hell, to this day, I still quote a lot of Independence Day. In particular, Will Smith's lines, you know, come and get me, come and get me, don't you got, you can't hate nothing. And of course, my personal favorite, you know, him and Jeff Goldblum going, yo, I ain't hear no fat lady. Forget the fat lady, you're obsessed with the fat lady, get us out of here. I quote that verbatim. So again, it was just, both movies were very enjoyable, and you know, the crowd was really into both of them. At the time, we may see the flaws now, but at the time, you know, people enjoyed them. So it created a very enjoyable movie theater experience. At number 8, we have the very first Iron Man movie. Now, this was really the first movie under kind of like not completely the Marvel Studios, but I guess it's considered part of that Marvel Studios line. Though this one under the line of Paramount. And I just remember having so much fun with that crowd watching that movie. You know, again, a nice packed theater, enjoyable. And of course, you know, when you have a packed theater like that, part of what it does is when those genuine funny moments happen, everybody laughs, and it makes those funny moments work even better. So, even though I had seen them on line before, and I was on the floor laughing, everybody was still on the floor laughing when he gets to the scene to where he's testing out. Actually, no, screw it. I did not see it. Nobody expected it. And there's the scene I'm talking about is he's testing out his gear, and he has a little too high the power outflow. It's he has the feet ones. The feet thrusters. And you go, thruster tested. 3, 2, 1. Smack against the wall. We were busting out laughing at that moment. And of course the other generally funny moments that, Robert Downey Jr. was born to play Tony Stark. I think that can be safely said now. It's interesting to see, at one point he was on WrestleMania back in the 90s, where he gets a cigarette blown out by Roddy Piper. And this is before he becomes famous for Iron Man, way before. So I guess WWE saw the star in him before anybody else did. But that's besides the point. But no, it was just this enjoyable experience. And, I mean, again, this is the year of the Dark Knight. And it was that thing like, oh, how good is Iron Man going to be? And then we all go and see Iron Man. I'm like, oh my God, Iron Man kicked ass. How the hell is Dark Knight going to follow that? Dark Knight is going to be such a letdown after this movie. And that's the type of experience it was. And it was just this fun, wonderful experience that I very much enjoyed. At number 7, the very first Spider-Man movie. Now, I actually saw this multiple times in the theater. And, the second time was very fun, and I very much enjoyed it. I actually liked the first Spider-Man movie. I do think that the second one is slightly better. But as far as a movie theater experience, the first time I went to go see it, I actually went to go see it with my mom, because my mom was interested in it as well. And here's why it topped the second Sam Raimi Spider-Man movie. Again, I'm talking about the Sam Raimi here, so I'm talking 2002, the very first Spider-Man movie. And, even though I do felt that the second Sam Raimi Spider-Man movie is better than that, and those two are the two best Spider-Man movies ever made, the reason the first Spider-Man sticks out in my mind, the first time I went to go see it, as I said, I went to go see it with my mom. And mind you, it was a fairly packed theater. Not all the way, but about 75%. And, it was a very enjoyable movie. But what made it so special was, again, remember, at the time of this movie, I was living in Florida, in Largo, Florida. So, for those wrestling fans who listen to my CMU wrestling reviews, or listen to Riff Down, what is one of my favorite wrestlers of all time? That would be a Mr. Hulk Hogan, who just so happens to live in that particular time where we're living, about 2 miles away from where I was living in Bel Air Beach. Guess who was at the theater that night, in that exact theater, sitting 4 or 5 rows in front of me? A Mr. Hulk Hogan and a Mr. Brian Knobbs of the Nasty Boys. This is awesome! This is awesome! It's like, it's Hulk Hogan! I'm like grabbing my mother's arm. It's like, it's Hulk Hogan! I'm watching Spider-Man with Hulk Hogan! This is awesome! And mind you, again, the movie was really good as well. I really enjoyed the movie. I mean, it's this double whammy of, I have this great Spider-Man movie where Spider-Man really brought to life in a wonderful way, and Hulk Hogan sitting like 4 or 5 rows in front of me. Life doesn't get no better than this. So I agree, this just awesome cheesy moment that I very much enjoyed. At number 6, we're going to kind of go away from action movies. We've been really focused on action movies, and I guess, yeah, I'm an action movie junkie and everything, and very rarely do I go out and see an actual comedy. I mean, outside of animated movies and action movies, I don't really, I guess, expand my movie theater experience. Maybe I should. I don't know. But with today's money prices, it's not kind of ideal. You go and see what you want to see. I mean, I do. Like, for instance, this past year, I saw the, Muppets Most Wanted, and I went and saw Glorious. Well, I did. I remember going and seeing Glorious Bastards. That was great in theaters as well. I mean, hell, I just went for the whole Jewish bear scene. where the Jewish American soldier beats the fucking shit out of that German soldier with the baseball bat, which is wonderful. And I guess it's horrible of me to like that scene. It's my Jewish pride talking. I mean, I am CM Jew, best Jew in the world. But no, the World War II movie starring George Clooney, I can't remember the name, where they're like getting the treasures. And it was a very good movie. I very much enjoyed it. It had John Goodman in it and Bill Murray. Oh God, I'm blanking on it, but that's besides the point. But, you know, the point being is that most movies I have gone and seen have been either animated movies or, you know, action movies. You know, it was kind of different when I was younger. I remember when we were younger, we would go to see kid movies as part of art club because the theater was like a mile away. And so they'd walk us from the school that the art club was at across the train tracks, which is always a production. And we'd walk to the theater where, you know, we'd eat and we'd watch either animated movies or kid movies. I remember watching Sandlot in the theaters that way. But we're going to go to a comedy movie, and it was just so wonderful, and it always sticks out in my mind. Because literally, even though it wasn't a theater that was in the hood, the theater was filled with a lot of people from the hood. I don't want to say African, because it wasn't all African Americans, though it was a majority. And the reason it was African Americans because of the movie. The movie I'm talking about is Barbershop. I love the movie Barbershop. Barbershop is a very underrated black comedy that can be enjoyed, I think, by a lot of people. And you know what? It was this great experience because it was literally going to a black theater. You had people jumping out, yelling at the screen, cheering, everything. I was like, this is awesome. I'm like, I feel like I'm at the Apollo watching this. And I think that's a great way to watch a film. There are people that, like, everybody has to be quiet, and we all have to laugh and be sort of controlled. But the fact of the matter is, you know, when you have a film that good and creates that type of spontaneous energy to, you know, where everybody's enjoying it, you know, I love those experiences. And, you know, to all of them, to, you know, there's a point where the woman stands up for herself and people are cheering for her and everything. It's all awesome. I mean, I'll get to me being able to quote that movie. But one of the things that also made this experience so great was I wasn't the only white person there. I hate to make this sound racial, which is why I'm struggling with it. Because it had nothing to do with race, mind you. It just so happened that race was a part of it. You know, you had this primarily black audience. You have some Latinos and Asians there. People generally, again, this is Largo. You know, we're not that far from South St. Pete, so we're not that far from a major hood population. Not hood population. That sounds wrong, and I apologize for that. But from a, you know, major, you know, I don't want to say slum. How do I put it? Well, basically from where the hood was in Pinellas County. What was considered the hood. There's actually several hoods in Pinellas. There's, you know, West Central Largo, which is a smaller hood, you know, Rainbow Village. It was considered the hood. And I had been to, I mean, hell, I've been shot at in Rainbow Village by an old cranky black man. And I'm not lying about that. I wish I was. and then South St. Pete, which is infamous for having two race riots. I know this is a long explanation. Just go with me here. I'm getting to the point. The point is, you know, yeah. So you had this large urban audience member. The only, I guess, non-hood members was me. And I'm primarily a card-carrying member of the hood who doesn't live in the hood. Or at least of urban culture. And then there was this nice white family. A dad, a mom, and their two young children, who apparently saw the title and thought they were going to see a nice family comedy. Oh my God, were they wrong. And, okay, what's the scene? It was a I remembered the scene. The scene is where, you know, there's this storyline going through Barbershop where the Eve's character, you know, has this abusive boyfriend. And, I'm trying to remember which character got in the fight. But basically, he goes to the barbershop and starts terrorizing her. And I can't remember his name, but he's light-skinned, has an afro. You know, hates him. And you know, he's starting stuff with Eve. Eve's like, go, you fool, pushes him out. He starts to make a move at her. He comes out and goes, bam, punches him. The audience goes nuts. Everybody is jumping out of their seat. We're all cheering at the screen. I peek over to the White family. They are cowering in their seats. Like, oh my god, what did we get into? They're like looking for an escape pattern. Like, we're about to charge on them. It was freaking hilarious. And I know that's horrible with me, that my enjoyment came from like a white family being scared out of their minds that they were going to get jumped and robbed. But it just, I just found it absolutely hilarious. And the film is still one of my favorites. I mean, I am an Eddie fan. I mean, to this day, I can, you know, who wants this side, man? You see that thing here, the bad people. He's out there too bad. Woo, Ronnie King, Sugarhead, be dry, drunk, being wounded in a Hyundai. Two, OJ did it.
OJ did it.
That's what it. And three, RuPaul ain't doing nothing but sit ass down on the bus. That's right, I'll sit it.
Oh, what's he talking about, Eddie? What's up? Eddie, come back here. Come back here, Eddie. I can't let you witness. Let me tell you something. You better never let Jesse Jackson
hear you say that. Man, fuck Jesse Jackson. Because I do not get tired of doing that impression. Ever. Oh my god, I love Barbershop. And that's just number six. So with that, let's move into number five. The Avengers from 2012. I had to make sure I wanted to make that distinction, not to be confused with the Avengers of 1998. Whole different movie I never went and saw. But the Avengers from 2012, oh my god. Packed theater, full of comic book fans, people dressed up in costumes. I mean, this was before the Dark Knight Rises, this event of Aura, Colorado. For those who know, Avengers came out before Dark Knight Rises. And that created a whole different experience for that movie as well, because I remember watching Dark Knight Rises and continuously looking over at the, you know, because we were at the end of a building where there was an exit sign, and some stupid idiot decided to go out that exit, and everybody got up and looked towards the exit, because that person was an idiot. But I remember going to the theater, watching Avengers, because it's bored, people dressed up in costumes, there was like a guy dressed up as Deadpool, people had the light, it was just this fun atmosphere. And just all of us there experiencing the Avengers and enjoying it and having fun. You know, I mean, and another part of these movies, especially with these more recent movies that have come out, part of my experience has been the, you know, after. You know, standing there with fellow comic book fans and talking about the movie. Or even getting to explain something to somebody, as with this movie, there were some people who didn't know who Thanos was, and sitting there explaining, well, here's Thanos, he's this space villain who eventually gets this item called the Infinity Gauntlet, with these stones called the Infinity Stones, and he almost brings about the end of the universe. It's part of this massive Marvel crossover from the 90s called the Infinity Gauntlet, and it's like, you know, me knowing, oh my god, they're gonna build up to that storyline? Holy shit. But, you know, just that fun experience. And again, like I said, when you have that full theater and everybody's engaged in the movie, a lot of the funny moments are just made that much more fun, funnier. And, you know, again, to see the Wizard of Oz joke with Captain America was a big one there. You know, Tony Stark's, all his jokes were just fun. Everybody being into it. And just people, like, cheering. You know, the actions. When it gets to that scene to where, You know, it's that one continuous camera shot where it starts, you know, with Iron Man, and he goes to Captain America, and they're fighting, and it goes up to, he goes up to Hawkeye, who shoots the arrow, who then launches it, and it causes a thing to crash into the giant whale thing, where Thor and Hulk are fighting, and it crashes into the, and people are cheering when it crashes into Central Station, and there's that moment where Hulk and Thor are there, and then Hulk throws that punch and smiles, and the place erupts in laughter. And then it cannot be a couple moments later, the Loki scene with Hulk, where the puny god is like, "Stop, you vile beast. You're gonna, because I am a god," and boom, boom, boom. I am surprised nobody died from how hard we were laughing in that theater. And it's like, "Beauty God." And we just start clapping. And it's this wondrous experience. So yeah, Avengers from 2012 is number 5. With that, let's move on to number 4. And number 4 is The Dark Knight. I mean, obviously, this movie had to be on the list because, you know, again, I was watching it last night, and it was one of the ones that reminded me of all these movie theater experiences. But yeah, and it was very interesting because it was then going to that movie like, how is this going to beat Iron Man? Iron Man came out swinging. And, you know, Batman Begins was an enjoyable film, and everybody was excited for the Joker, but Batman Begins wasn't the best Batman film ever. I mean, I like it. And I look back at it now, and it's my number 6 favorite, behind Dark Knight, 1989 Batman, Batman Mask of the Phantasm, Batman Sub-Zero. I'm number 5, excuse me. Number 5. I'll leave it at that. That's another countdown that I just did. Impromptu. right in the middle of another countdown. But it's like, Joker, can the Joker really be this good? Because, you know, hearing some of Heath Ledger's lines was just, oh my god. And you get there, and it was just, it was an experience. I mean, Iron Man was fun, but The Dark Knight was an experience. And that's why The Dark Knight, I think, is considered better than Iron Man in that song. I mean, Iron Man was a great movie. I mean, everybody loved both movies, but I think if you ask somebody which movie was better that summer, most people are going to say Dark Knight. And it's because, at the end of the day, while Iron Man was a fun, enjoyable movie, Dark Knight was an experience. You felt that movie. And the thing that was also unique about it was, unlike Avengers, where it was a huge, like, young crowd, like, it was a majority of it was a young sort of geek crowd, this was more mature geeks, which I actually feel more of akin to. So it was a different type of reaction to a lot of things, where I feel like if it was a young crowd I had gone with, I mean, not only there was young people there, but it would have been a different experience. But I just remember all of us sitting and enjoying it, and, you know, hearing gasps along the way, and everything, just enjoying it, and oh my god, like, people just being in awe of Heath Ledger's wondrous, performance, and just all the great moments in that movie, the point to where he goes to Michael J. White, where he kills him, and he tells him the story of how he got these scars. You know how I got these scars? My father was abusing my wife, my mother. And then, there's a scene where he goes after Harvey Dent, and he's at the party, and he has Rachel. And he goes, "You know how I got these scars?" And he tells a completely different story. It was brilliant. The whole, "let her go." Poor choice of words. I mean, the scene in the precinct where, Gordon goes, "Where's Harvey?" He's like, "Well, what time is it? Why does that matter?" "Well, if it's a one time, he's here. If it's another time, he's other places." "If I'm going to do this, I'm going to need a cup of coffee." It's like, "Good cop, bad cop, huh?" Not quite. Light comes on, Batman's behind him, slams his head into And you think he's going to go, ow. Instead, the brilliance of the script goes, you never start with the head. It makes people all fuzzy. Oh my god, the line in this movie is scene with Harvey. But the fact of the matter is, as amazing as the Joker was in this movie, the shiny moment that, the one moment that the audience actually verbally started laughing and came out and like did a big cheer for, is Morgan Freeman's. It's the scene to where, you know, the funeral's happening and Bruce is like doing the ballistics on the bullet. And the guy comes into Morgan Freeman's office and is like, you know, I was going over the numbers again and I found the discrepancies. I'm like, well, Wiles is in prison. Like, not with theirs, with ours. And, you know, I saw R&D was burning through crafts, and so I looked into the archives. Don't tell me you didn't see your baby out there pancaking cop cars in the evening news. And now you have R&D going through all this cash. What are you building for him now? I want $10 million for the rest of my life every year. And Morgan Freeman first sits back and then leans forward, taking off his glasses. And the brilliance of this scene is, this scene can be played 10 different ways. But David Goyer, and I'm of the belief, and I have to insist, that this was not Christopher Nolan. This was David Goyer's script and Morgan Freeman who came up with this idea. Because there's 10 different ways they could have played that scene, but David Goyer and Morgan Freeman played it the 11th way that nobody knew you possibly could. And it was brilliant. He leans in against, so let me get this straight. You believe that our client, the most wealthiest, powerful man in all of Gotham, is secretly a vigilante who goes out at night and beats up people to a bloody pulp. And your plan is to blackmail him. Good luck! That's like, oh my god! We were all tearing and laughing our asses off at that scene. End of the day, Dark Knight was just, it was an experience. I mean, that's just what it was. But the fact that I can quote so many scenes verbatim, because it was an experience. So, ultimately, yeah, number four, Dark Knight. Number three, and, you know, I actually was very twisted in putting this at number three, because it's so recent, it just recently came out, but you know what? I'll be damned, this is my list, and it's what, you know, based off my experiences. And, you know, when I experience a movie so good, and the crowd is so into it, and we have such a great time, that I go back the next night with a different group of friends. And again, it's packed. Again, we have a good time. And mind you, both times are in IMAX 3D, where I have to pay $17 a pop. It has to be a wondrous experience. I am, of course, talking about Godzilla 2014 as my number three favorite, you know, movie theater experience. And that's what it was. Godzilla 2014 was an experience. I mean, I remember, you know, getting there early, getting their glasses, and there being a line already just to wait. People who had already bought their tickets, waiting to get into the theater, and all of us being excited, especially that second time I went. You know, I knew the movie. I knew everything was going to happen. You know, mind you, I'm not the type of person that spoils anything, but just like, oh no, I saw it last night. Oh my god, your mind is going to be blown, because I really believed it. We had a person that came with us on the second night that, like, oh my god, Godzilla sucks. She came out of that theater saying, okay, it wasn't as bad as I thought it would be. But just that entire movie was an experience. I'm the person putting it, like, I understand that there's some flaws, but I think a lot of the flaws that people are pointing out with the movie are very superficial. It's one of those movies to where it was done in a way to where you either like it or you don't. It's not that the movie is bad, it's that certain people are looking for different things from a Godzilla movie. And for me, it gave me everything I could ever possible want. I mean, it was giving me things I didn't even know were going to be in it, but I didn't believe they would ever give us, especially when now hearing what the second movie is going to have. Oh my god. But, you know, and just the different moments where rounds of applause were given. You know, when, I'm blanking on the actor's name. But when he first says, you know, we call him Wojia. You know, everybody getting up and clapping. You know, when Godzilla first appears and people like cheer, like, yeah, Godzilla's here. And then, of course, he went away. Nobody booed, mind you. But the big moment, because it was the moment I was looking for, and I've talked about this verbatim for the past couple months. But, you know, the use of the atomic breath. To where, you know, the monsters lean down at Aaron Johnson's character, leaning at, and then you see this blue aura in the background. And then you see it on some item, and you see it go climbing up and up what you know is Godzilla's spine. And you know it's coming. It has that moment where all of a sudden it's gone for a moment as Godzilla takes a breath, and then boom! People stood up and cheered the hell out of that scene. It was this great experience, like, oh yeah! Yes! Yeah, baby! Yeah! And then comes this second time. And hopefully I remember to put spoilers, you know, ahead of time for those who may have not seen it yet. But, you know, the second time where he uses the breath for the, oh my god, fatality of the year. Where he breathes it down the monster's throat. Oh my fucking god, did we stand up and cheer. And then when the credits rolled, we stood up and cheered, and we were clapping. You know, it was an absolute incredible experience. As a Godzilla fan, to finally have this great American Godzilla film that we all knew the American filmmakers could make. And to be able to experience a Godzilla film in theaters, because I haven't had the chance to really experience that too often. Primarily, it's been this one and the 98. So, to be able to experience my favorite character in the movie theater, of course it's going to be one of my favorites. So, with that, let's move on to my number two. And I don't, you know, these top two may be seen as cheating, but let's go with number two. Number two, it's actually the same movie. It's just separated by showings that are, oh my god, when it came, what, 2012? So 20 years apart? Holy shit. Yeah, it was. You know, this was in 2012 when I saw it. So yeah, separated by, you know, because it was the 20th anniversary. I'm, of course, talking about Beauty and the Beast. Now, I remember being young. This was 92, so I was 7. Actually, it was 8 because it came out in November. So, yeah, I was 8 at the time. And I remember really enjoying that movie. And again, being a young kid during the early 90s, you know, where masculinity was, even as a young kid, you understood it. It was one of those things where even though you enjoyed the movie, you kind of hid it as a little kid because you didn't want to be the boy that was into the girly stuff. But I just remember having an enjoyable experience in that theater, all kids thoroughly enjoying the movie. I don't have much memories of that, but that's why it combines with the second time I went to go see it. Now, this is the only one in this list to where the theater wasn't packed, but then again, that was because this was a limited showing. I don't know if a lot of people knew it about it. It was like a 9 o'clock showing. And it was on a school night. So, I think if had this been on the weekend, there probably would have been packed. But, you know, it was still a good 40%, 50% of Feld. What I'm talking about is that in 2012, Walt Disney released a 3D version of Beauty and the Beast for a limited time, celebrating the 20th anniversary. Along with the re-release of the movie on DVD in theaters. And they had done this for a couple films. And so I went to go see it. And part of the reason is, like, all these fans of Beauty and the Beast were there watching it. with our 3D glasses, and you know, just being amazed at, you know, the 3D was spectacular. You know, this is one of the few times where I can accept the 3D as being actually a part of the movie and actually doing something for it. Not that I don't prefer the non-3D version over it. I'd rather watch that, but, you know, it gave it this pop-up fairy tale book feel to it that was actually very enjoyable. But what really set this experience apart was, again, the songs and the fact that everybody in the theater knew the songs. You know, not everybody was singing Belle. I mean, some of us were singing Belle. I mean, I sung all the songs. I mean, and mind you, this wasn't a sing-along like Frozen, where apparently Frozen fans need the sing-along. They need the lyrics on the screen to sing along. Or if you're a young boy from Boston, as Chris can attend to, sing none of those songs. Again, go back to my Frozen review with Chris for that story. But I just remember sitting there, us all singing the songs, you know, be our guest, we're all singing it, but then comes Beauty and the Beast. And of course, obviously everybody knows Beauty and the Beast, there was a pop song of it, but still the fact, Beauty and the Beast, and at that point, nobody cared, because it was this build-up. Because everybody wanted to sing the songs, they were kind of nervous about singing it around other people, you could obviously tell. So the singing was very soft, you know, and as the songs, more songs happened, people got more and more comfortable singing. Because, like, hey, we're all Beauty and the Beast fans. We're not trying to say who's the best singer. We're just enjoying and singing the song. And it gets to Beauty and the Beast, and we're all singing it out loud. And it's this great thing to where you have the movie playing, and all these people are singing, Tale as Old as Time. Oh, da, 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 da. And just immersing and enjoying ourselves in this movie that we've seen a million times and loved so much. It was just this, oh my god, it was a connective experience, because in that moment, like, we all connected, we are all fans of this movie, because we think this is one of the greatest movies we've ever seen, in some form or fashion. You know, in some form, it's one of our favorite movies, to the point to where we've memorized all the songs and we just love singing them. So that was just a great experience. That's why I combined it with the first time, because I remember being in the theater full of kids and all of us pretty much enjoying it. So that brings me to my number one movie theater experience. Now again, it's a tie between two different movies that came out around the same time. They both came out in 1989. I can't remember which one came out first. But they every time I think of going to see these movies in the theater, don't quite night in the theater, which I'll explain. This is the other part that's kind of cheating. But they just, it's all, I almost like remember like seeing them on a double feature, even though I didn't. I think it's like they were out for some time, and one was about to end, one had just started. So one night we went and saw, or one week we went and saw one, and then the next week we went and saw the other. Now, the reason it's cheating is because I actually didn't see these in a theater. I saw these in a drive-through theater. Because these movies I saw back when I was about, about 3-4 years old. Yeah, not 4 years old. Because this was the summer of 1989. My number one pick is the 1989 Batman movie, and the first Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie. You know, this is back when I lived with my father, and, you know, my mother, my sister, me, we lived with my father. And he had this blue van, and near where we lived was this drive-in movie theater, this massive drive-in movie theater. And so anytime we'd go see, we saw a couple of movies, but these two are the ones that really stick out. But we'd take the van, and, you know, of course, he would, you know, reverse park it, so, you know, the doors on the back would open towards the movie screen, and we would just lay there. And if you've never experienced drive-through theater, and which I think is sad that a lot of them are gone. I mean, I don't know, for a lot of the young people who might be listening to this, really, if they know where a drive-through theater is, they may have seen it in old movies, but there really is no other experience like you know, driving your car in, well, or at least your dad driving your car in, backing up, opening up the trunk doors, having a blanket, going getting popcorn and that stuff, and getting to watch a movie. And I just remember the experience of this huge, gigantic screen and getting to watch the 1989 Batman, which is still one of my favorites on it, and the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And it was, these two movies were two movies that really affected my life, I feel. It got me into Turtles, it got me into Batman, and of course those would eventually get me into anime and comic books. So it was just wondrous experience that to this day, I'm 28 now. This is when I was 4, so 1989, so 2009. It's been about 25 years. I still remember it vividly, and it just sticks so well in my mind. It's oh my god, such a grand experience, because there will be no movie theater experience that will ever beat a drive-through theater, because it is this vastly different experience. As much as a crowd, you know, and mind you, it was crowded. There were tons of cars there watching it, but it was very sort of, I guess you could say, maternal, you know, family type of maternal experience that you really couldn't enjoy otherwise. So that is it for Thomas's top 10, and oh my god, I went longer than I did. See, I want to try to keep this under 30 minutes, but you know, the way I can go off on things, you never know. So if you have any emails or comments, remember you can email us at, you know, AbsolutionNetwork132@gmail.com. That's AbsolutionNetwork132@gmail.com. And of course, you can always find us on Stitcher and on Facebook by searching for The Absolution Network. And you can always leave a comment on the site, which you can find at www.an.132productions.com. And of course, remember to check out all the other 132 Productions content that, of course, includes John Ramos's Toku videos, Shin Tiger Curls videos, my CMG's wrestling reviews, and Tom's Prerogative, and of course the Attack Momentum, many more, the Shaft Plus podcast, the Tokyo SOS podcast, and of course my CMG's comic book Crazy and Hexcast podcasts. And of course, make sure you check out all our friends on the sidebar of the site. So that is it for this episode of Thomas's Top 10. Until the next final countdown, my Toonami generation, stay golden.